Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Fun, entertaining, knowledgeable.
All right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
Live and local, it's time for the Fan Morning Show with Bart Winkler.
Good morning, everybody. I am Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz. It is my least favorite day of the sports calendar year. I hate today. Also, I went to the Bucks game last night, and while I got a great deal on tickets, I'm not entirely sure that it was worth it, the product that I saw last night. I hate today because it is schedule release day, and I do love the schedule release. I'm a schedule junkie. I like schedules. I don't know. I like looking at TV schedules. I like looking at sports schedules. I think with sports, there's a lot of us like this. I like looking at that fbschedules.com and seeing the non-conference games, the college football teams play each other from now until 2039. So I like that. I'm interested in that. I like schedules. I always liked when the work schedule came out when I worked at a grocery store in high school. And I would look at it and pore over it for hours. And they'd say, Bart, you only work one day a week and you're pushing carts. And then I wouldn't answer back because I was super shy. And it was awkward. But I love schedules. Today, though, I don't necessarily love, because we are going to get the full schedule tonight at 7. And there's a schedule release show for the NFL schedule around 7. It usually drops around 6 anyway, the full thing. And then if you watch the schedule release show to actually see when the schedule is going to be released, like with no spoilers, you're the only one. I mean, nobody does that. But what I don't like is that we find out things trickle throughout the day and we're like quick to report them, as if it's some knowledge that we're not going to find out in 12 hours. I just don't understand the allure of, oh my God, did you see that the Packers play? I can tell you right now, the Packers play week one against the Saints in the Fox game of the week, 325. But you're going to find that out in 12 hours. I don't see what the rush is. So there's all these schedule leaks. Ooh, what's the schedule leak going to be? We're going to find out in 12 hours. But some of you are, this is what you like. That's fine. I like what I like. You like what you like. Some of you are going to be glued into your phones and social media all day trying to find out who the Packers play in week 13. Is it at noon? Is it at 3? Is it on Fox? Is it on CBS? The article that is already titled, because the Packers are going to play at 325 week one. This is what Pro Football Talk has. Aaron Rodgers gets the Fox late afternoon slot week one, whether with Packers or Broncos, because the Broncos and Giants also play on Fox at 325. And of course, if there's a way to make a story about Aaron Rodgers, Mike Florio and the gang at Pro Football Talk will do it. This isn't even a Mike Florio article. He's got Michael David Smith, who I used to really admire. He's got him under the spell of All Rogers all the time. Speaking of All Rogers all the time, we will hear from Adam Schefter today. He came out on his podcast and tried to backtrack on the backtrack. So he was talking on Dan Patrick about how he had no sources, and now he's backtracking on that. So we'll try to give him the benefit of the doubt, because Adam Schefter has become as much of the story as anybody. Again, the ongoing Rogers saga. We'll put the Rogers stuff aside for a little bit here today. We'll get into it maybe next hour with Horvath, but we'll put it aside at least for the next hour. We got some Brewers to talk about, got some Bucks to talk about, but the schedule, man. Sam, how about this? Let's buy into it today. If you see any leak of any kind, let me know. I don't care if it's who Jacksonville plays in London.
Oh
God. Give me an A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
H-I-J-K.
This is unbelievable. Sam's microphone does not work. We've tried to fix this multiple times. And it's to the point where, yes, I'm going to mention it on air because I'm annoyed. Although the look of disgruntledness on Sam's face is ripe for comedy, although only I get that. Only I get to see that. Give me a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Give me like on Charlie Brown, they go wah 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 wah.
Okay.
All right, so if the microphone breaks a little bit.
Just go into Charlie Brown mode?
Yeah, we just gotta power through it.
All right.
So be my schedule guide today.
Will do.
Every leak. Cause we all don't we act like, oh my God, this huge news has been discovered. The Watergate tapes.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's Packers Saints week one. We're going to find that out in 12 hours anyway.
But I was seeing like last night, like week 15, Broncos and Titans or whatever. It's like, oh my God, who cares?
But well, some people do. And so we're going to serve that audience today.
All right, let's do it.
Because if you don't get it from me, you're going to get it from someone else. Every major network is dropping their week one schedules today with Synergy. Corporate Synergy is strong today. Fox and Friends is going to announce Packers Saints officially today. CBS Sunday Morning is going to announce their week one slate. Good Morning America will announce the first Monday Night Football game. And that's it. So Corporate Synergy is very, very strong here today. More on the schedule. Again, so what we have is, and if there's more confirmed with the Packers, I didn't see it. Week one, they got the Saints in the late afternoon spot. I am hearing Thanksgiving or Christmas. More likely Christmas. Christmas is on a Saturday. Last year, the Vikings and Saints played on Christmas. It was one game on a Friday. That's what I think the Packers get. They get games that are nationally televised, but would be watched by everybody anyway, regardless of if Aaron Rodgers is going to be the quarterback or not. I think they'll get, I would expect them to get some late season Sunday night games that can get flexed out. I would expect them to get, you know, this first week afternoon window. They'll get high profile games, but they're going to ease it up a little bit because we don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to be quarterback or not. That's what I expect today. So we'll find out again throughout the day. We may know the full schedule by the end of the show today because people are so quick and happy to leak, but the schedule release shows are on various networks tonight at 7. Normally, NFL.com or Packers.com puts it out there at 6. So again, 12 hours from now, we'll get there. I want to talk some Brewers. Tough loss for them last night in extra innings. And the Bucks. So I go to this Bucks game. It's $40, and it comes with a beer voucher. And we sat in the second deck, but we were like at half court, 50-yard line kind of thing. So it was nice seats for $40 and a free beer. Essentially, I paid $28 for a ticket. You can't go wrong with that. I like it. I like the space. Not because of the germs, but because I like the space. I got nobody, five seats of me. I got one other couple in my row. I was there with my brother. I got nobody in front of me, nobody behind me. You don't have to get up repeatedly. Going to games where there's not a lot of people is fun. yes, it is fun to also go to games that are packed and everybody's into every play. And the Bucks are going to try to do that. The Brewers as well. Both are expanding to 50% capacity. Brewers as soon as this weekend. The Bucks will be doing it for the playoffs. So, yeah, in the playoffs, you want more than 3,000 people there. But it just looked like nobody was there. I saw everybody that got on the Jumbotron 2-3 times. We got on the Jumbotron as, like, in the background 2-3 times. So you were up there. You were up there at some point. And you really started to know these people. Oh, that's the lady with pink hair. They shout her out in the beginning of the game. Then she was shown in the first quarter for the wash your hands cam. Then she played a game in the second quarter. Now I've learned that her name is Elizabeth. Now I learned that she went to Nicolet. Now I learned that she loves puppies and long walks on the beach. You really got to know these people because there's nobody to show on the Jumbotron. They show them repeatedly and repeatedly. The experience was fine. You had to walk a little bit if you wanted a concession stand on the second deck because why keep them all open? I thought it was going to be super strict in terms of, hey, stay in your seat. I think they've eased up on that from what I've heard some of you guys that went right away. I went to the bathroom. Like, I went to the bathroom, and it was no shame. There's nobody in there. I didn't have to wait. Nobody was waiting for me. So there's a benefit to going to games where nobody's there. You like to be a part of the crowd, but also there is a benefit of going to games where nobody's there. Now, when you look around, we had higher seats, so we could look around. It did not even look like 3,000 people. I mean, it was pretty barren. But what was the worst part of this whole experience was the game. I don't know, were you flipping Brewers and Bucks last night? I tried to pull up the Brewers come the eighth inning, ninth inning, and heard them blow it on the way home. But the Bucks game was awful last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say is, like, I don't know how much we can recap the Bucks game last night because it wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. Chris Middleton had another weird game where he just decided to vanish for some reason. But, yeah, I felt like we were going to get more of a breakdown from your experience than the actual game itself.
No, the game was terrible.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it didn't feel like we won, but at the same time, like, didn't really feel like we accomplished anything with now, like, 3 games left in the regular season.
Well, I'm not sure who was trying on that court.
That's what I'm saying.
The Bucks were going at like 30% speed, which, hey, there's a positive. They can go at 30% speed and beat the Magic, who have nobody. I mean, Mo Wagner was one of the stars of the night last night, who's bounced around on like 6 different teams somehow this year in this shortened season. Giannis had a steal and then a dunk, which I thought he was like going to tear the basket off. He just kind of eased it in there. That was really the only time it felt like I was at a National Basketball Association game. They were up 9, 10, 11 points pretty much the whole time, but there was never a threat of the Magic coming back. You know, Middleton and Drew took a long time to get going. What was Middleton? 3 of 15, I think I saw. So he struggled again. It was not a good game. It was very much not a good game. Whether you're watching it or in person, it did not feel like an NBA game. I don't know what it felt like. It didn't feel like a college. It just felt like they were going through the motions, man.
Yeah, very lethargic.
But they got the win.
Yeah.
So that's good. The Nets also won last night, though. If we're still trying to get the 2 seed, the Nets beat the Bulls. Kyrie hurt his face and had to leave. I'm not sure what's going on there. So the Nets are 2 games back of the Sixers. The Bucks are 3 back of the Sixers. Sixers getting handed a loss. So maybe, just maybe, but it does look like the Bucks will be locked into that 3 seed. We'll see what happens. They've got the day off here, and then they're going to finish things up over the next couple of days. They've got the Pacers tomorrow and then Saturday and Sunday. We still don't know the game time Saturday and Sunday. So if you're going Saturday, we still don't know the game times. I told you guys yesterday that the NBA said all games Saturday and Sunday are either going to start at 11 Central or 2:30 Central. And NBA players said, I don't think so. So they've changed it. But I still don't know when the game times are going to be. So Bucks lose, game boring, win good. Brewers we'll get to in a little bit. They've got to figure out how to hit. and they've got to figure out how to hit with runners in scoring position. And you got to stop wasting performances like what Freddie gave you yesterday. You got to stop wasting them. Plus, the NFL schedule will trickle out throughout the rest of the day, throughout part of the show. We'll have it all for you. Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz here on The Fan. 1250 AM, The Fan. Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz, Jake Fisher. His new book is out. It's called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Jake joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Jake, thanks for a couple minutes. First of all, congratulations on getting a book written. I've thought a few times in my life, hey, maybe I should write a book. And then I sit there and then I can't figure out what to write on. And then I know a lot. Writing a book, man, that is a journey. So congratulations to you on that first and foremost.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I mean, just like how Aaron Rodgers is, you know, everything and everything in Green Bay, you know, in the NBA, it's probably even more important to get these superstars, and tanking to get them at the top of the draft just kind of became a pretty good topic for a book.
Yeah, you could tank to get one, or you could just, like, be the Nets and have, you know, three people just randomly come over to you. But I think that the tanking thing that has happened in the NBA, it's become popular for especially teams that don't have the draws of Miami Beach or the LA spotlight. And I think immediately of the Bucks and where they were at, you know, several years ago when there was the draft class with Embiid and then Jabari and Wiggins. And so the Bucks were essentially tanking, trying to get a good pick, a top lottery pick, and they used that on Jabari. What's interesting about that time for the Bucks is Jabari was the focus. But it was Giannis who got drafted in the middle of the round that has really turned it around. And I think that's just a good example of you can do all this and spend all this time, but there is no guarantee at all that it's going to work. And so is it even worth it? And I know you discovered a bunch of scenarios like that.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 3 years talking to over 300 people around the NBA. One of them was John Hammond, the former Bucks general manager. We talked at length. First, about that 2013 draft class, you know, obviously Giannis fell to 15 in that year. You know, he had this grainy footage coming out of Greece. A lot of NBA executives didn't really know what to make of it, right? Like, he's playing in, like, these middle school gyms against guys half of his size. But, you know, the Bucks really saw something and saw some potential in him. And when I found out for the book, you know, they really screwed over the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks at the time were the team on the hottest pursuit for Giannis. They actually brought him over under cloak and dagger to visit Atlanta. He had a dinner at the general manager at the time, Danny Ferry's house. They ordered chicken parm and ate at his kitchen table with his kids. They brought him into the Phillips Arena at the time and put on the lights, and they could see tears in Giannis's eyes, you know, after he came over from, you know, panhandling and selling bootleg sunglasses on the streets. But they never thought he was going to be, you know, what he became. They thought he had the potential. They thought he could be a potential, maybe even an all-star one day. They never thought he'd be a multiple-time MVP. And that 2013-14 season, his rookie year, you're right, they did end up tanking, but they were originally supposed to be a playoff contender. But that's how things happen in the NBA. That's why I think team building is so fascinating. There's so many unforeseen variables at play, whether it being, you know, the lottery odds and the lottery luck not bouncing your way, or, you know, if you are Atlanta and the guy you want, the guy you put in all the work for, goes two picks ahead of you, you kind of get screwed over there. So the Bucks really didn't have a choice in 2014. You know, that class, it was featuring Joel Embiid, Parker, Wiggins. It was supposed to be the best class since 2003. And coincidentally, at that time, the best players from 2003, LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh, were all running the league in Miami, right? So a lot of teams just thought, we'll punt this season, we'll punt next season, we'll collect this next generation of superstars, and by the time they're slipping out of their prime, you know, by the time the Heat start to, you know, wax and wane and their dynasty comes to a close, we'll be here and we'll be contending. And, you know, the Bucks really did think Jabari Parker was going to be that guy, and I think that just goes to show just how fickle this is and why a team like the Sixers and Sam Hinkie's process, why tanking year after year and collecting as many darts to throw at the dartboard it tends to be a pretty decent strategy because you are going to make mistakes and you are going to, you know, take a guy number two overall who has injury issues and, you know, doesn't end up panning out. So it really is a complicated and just almost improbably tall task to do. But that's why I think it needed to be encapsulated in a book.
Time with Jake Fisher. The book is called Built to Lose, regarding the NBA tanking era. How do you think that fans have come to accept tanking? Because I know, like, you never want to watch a team suck for years at a time. But you mentioned the Sixers, and while they haven't gotten to the NBA Finals since this has happened, they branded it. I mean, Trust the Process is a brand over there. The Thunder seem to have their fans on board. Now, the Thunder are going to a wild extreme where it's like they have a third of the draft picks for the next 6 years. Is this something that fans have come to accept as something as a positive for the team?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to an assistant general manager yesterday about this, and he said, you know, the Brainiacs got it right, being that, you know, Sam Hinkie was not the only executive to do this at that time period. You know, Oklahoma City did it originally back in 2007, starting with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and then the Oklahoma City Thunder poached Rob Hennigan from their front office to lead their rebuild post-Dwight Howard. Ryan McDonough came to power in Phoenix, Pete D'Alessandro in Sacramento, David Griffin in Cleveland. You know, the rise of analytical-minded executives around the league kind of propped up this tanking strategy where they calculated and saw, you know, the typical championship team has multiple all-stars on their roster, and the easiest, most direct path to get them is through the top of the draft. So if you're in the mid-tier of the league, you're not going to be competing really against those championship-caliber teams. You know, the Bucks and six Brandon Jennings-type teams aren't really going to have a shot at the title. So the best way, especially for a smaller market, to do that is to sink down to the bottom and get these guys. I mean, Jabari Parker and Andrew Wiggins didn't work out, but look what Joel Embiid can do, right? And this assistant general manager I talked to yesterday said the Brainiacs got it right. And the fact that now it is accepted, and teams sell hope. They don't sell, you know, the typical concept of, like, you, any night you come into our arena, we can have a victory and we can make you proud for your home city. Now it's the fact of, like, oh, one day, you know, this guy is showing great strides. Look at how much he's improving. In a couple years, when he gets to be an all-star, you know, he'll attract somebody else. That hope is tantalizing and exciting. And Philadelphia, during that time period, they were, you know, leading the league in new season ticket sales and selling that message of one day, of, you know, around the corner, of someday soon. And it seems to be something that, you know, fans do buy. And I think fans want direction. Like, I live in New York. I'm in Brooklyn now. I've been here for, you know, 5-6 years covering the league through Brooklyn and through the Knicks. And, you know, both these teams have been kind of wayward and not really having a direction ever since I've gotten here. Now they're both on a path. You're right about Brooklyn just signing three guys, and here they are. But, you know, the fact that the Knicks have some type of direction, have some type of identity, you know, teams just want to have that. And a lot of times that identity that really fans respond to is just the concept of, we'll be bad for a year or two for the hope of being really, really good a couple years down the line.
Bucks and six, always. That's for the culture.
Yeah, that's a rallying cry here in Milwaukee for sure. Talking with Jake Fisher again about the tanking era in the NBA. Built to Lose is the book, how the NBA's tanking era changed the league forever. It is out now wherever books are sold. You look at, though, like, I am a big soccer guy, so I look overseas, and if you're bad, there's a penalty. Yeah. You lose. You go down a tier. You are not in the league anymore. America, it's not like that. If you lose, you get rewarded. You get rewarded with the best player. The Jacksonville Jaguars get Trevor Lawrence. They get rewarded with the best player. It is just, you know, it's weird in America how we, you know, hate different forms of, I'll say, socialism, but then in our sports, we want the worst teams to have the best chance. We root for losing. And what you said about hope, I mean, it is pretty remarkable how you can sell hope and people will still watch a bad product because of how strong that feeling is of hope.
Yeah, I mean, we're also at a situation where a lot of teams also don't really have a choice, right? Like, look at the Houston Rockets this year. They did everything they could and positioned and were strategic to trade for James Harden back in 2012. They built a contender around him. And all of a sudden, you know, there were a lot of variables and factors, but he just says, trade me to Brooklyn. He just says it. And all of a sudden he ends up in Brooklyn, and now the Rockets are one of the worst teams in the league. They don't really have a choice. Like, there's not going to be a player right now in this current iteration of that Houston Rockets roster after they traded Harden who's going to say, yeah, sign me up. I'm a free agent. Give me the money. I'm coming to Houston. I'm bringing a title to that team. It's just the big markets play a big factor in the NBA. Obviously, we see it in other sports too, but I think in the NBA in particular, like, it's not like football or baseball where players are wearing a hat or a helmet. You know, these guys are out there in sleeveless shirts and shorts with their tattoos on full display and their personalities really on, you know, the center stage. It's a superstar-driven league. They're able to control both sides of the court, like, as good and amazing as Aaron Rodgers has been for that franchise, and, you know, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He doesn't play defense, right? Like LeBron and Giannis and any type of real superstar franchise-changing talent, they could impact the game both sides of the court for, you know, 40-plus minutes. And that type of influence that these stars have is just so powerful and so different from any other sport that I think it's just kind of tilted the scales out of whack, and it's made the NBA that much more prevalent based on how, you know, these superstars can kind of build up a whole ecosystem and a whole city downtown and bar scenes and all that type of stuff. It really is powerful what these guys can do.
Obviously, the NBA doesn't want it to be the end of the season where two teams are playing each other and there's no interest in the game, so they came in with this play-in tournament.
Yeah.
Do you think that's enough to discourage teams from tanking? I like the Wizards. Bucks play the Wizards, and the Wizards, normally things go awry for them. Okay, whatever, we'll play it out. But they've been very good the last couple of months because they're, you know, just anything they can do to get that 10 seed to just have a chance.
Yeah, in 2014, when all these teams were tanking in the book, you know, I talk about it, I wrote about it, I reported on it, but it happened back then where the league and the board of governors were unhappy about, you know, tanking teams coming into their arena, you know, like right in this end of the season, like you're talking about, and fans weren't filling the stands, and it was a problem. And they were kicking around all these ideas, like a tournament where the non-playoff teams all played for the number one pick, or, you know, Mike Zarin, the assistant general manager in Boston, has pitched this wheel concept where it completely detaches record from draft position. The play-in tournament was another addition to lottery reform that was exact in 2017, where now the bottom three teams only have a 14% chance at the number one pick versus in 2014 when Milwaukee, you know, bottomed out. They had the number one odds. They had a 25% chance of getting that number one slot that year. And the play-in tournament, you're right, it definitely encouraged teams like Washington and teams like New Orleans to play after it and try to get into that mix there. But I think it's curious. Like the Wizards, for example, they need to be competing, right? Because they have Bradley Beal, and it's the same type of conversation we're talking about. He's a superstar, all NBA guard, leading scorer in the league. You know, they need to do everything they can to keep that guy happy and keep him in a winning environment and keep him long term. They already did their work. They tanked to get him in back in the day. They had him at number three. They picked John Wall number one. That was supposed to be their team, and they've got that core. They got to keep it intact, but what are they really playing for here? They're playing for the potential to be the 8 seed, and they're going to draw Philadelphia or Brooklyn or Milwaukee in the first round. As much as no one wants to face that team right now, you know, most 10 seeds or 9 seeds or whatever in this play-in tournament aren't going to have been riddled by COVID for 2 weeks and have, you know, two all-star type guys. The average team in that situation, they're just playing for the right to get beat in the first round by those top teams, right? So that's why we see teams like Orlando trade Nikola Vucevic and Aaron Gordon and Evan Fournier, because they know they're not going to really make much noise in the playoffs. And in order to really avoid that situation, you know, you trade your guys, you get out of the lottery, or you get into the lottery and you get your stars. So as much as the play-in tournament is definitely pushing some teams to compete and really push together, you know, a final stretch run here, we are seeing teams across the league, like Oklahoma City, like you mentioned, Houston, like I talked about, Detroit, Orlando. I mean, there's a ton of teams that are still going to play that lottery no matter what.
Jake Fisher, you can also find his stuff at Bleacher Report. Who do you like to come out of the East?
I honestly, I really do think it's going to be Philadelphia. I think Brooklyn – I would have picked them at a certain point. I definitely was picking them at a certain point. But the fact that they haven't had their three guys together, the fact that they have these injury issues, the fact that they don't have a big man, really, that can consistently guard Giannis or Joel Embiid, I think is going to potentially cause an issue for them over seven games. Now, I could be wrong. I think Brooklyn could ultimately, I mean, they have one of the greatest offenses in NBA history. Maybe James Harden comes back to full health and they, you know, mesh perfectly, and it's just this offensive juggernaut like they've never seen before. But I think Brooklyn, I think Philadelphia and Milwaukee are built to beat that team in the postseason. And I think Philly right now seems to have the inside track at that one seed. So to avoid that brutal matchup,
yeah,
with the 2-3
that's huge.
In the second round, they're going to get the winner of that team in the Eastern Conference Finals, it looks like, at this point. That's going to be a huge advantage, too.
Jake, appreciate the time, man. The book is called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Available where you can get books. Congratulations again, and we'll be sure to find a reason to talk in the future.
I appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
Jake Fisher on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're applying for a home renovation loan and you're a bit anxious, breathe. Let Great Midwest Bank help you experience a state of tranquility. Get started at greatmidwestbank.com. Bodie911 tweets in and says, great interview. Would love to listen to again on demand. You can do that, of course, on the Odyssey app. Thank you for reaching out with that. Very, very kind to say, and we do appreciate it. Want to remind you about my good, good buddies at Window Select. WindowSelect.com, 262-703-3500, 262-703-3500, WindowSelect.com, where they have incentives and deals that are going to make sure that you have the most affordable window buying experience that you could find. Buy one, get one on the windows. Buy one, get one on the windows. No limit. So if you buy two windows, you get one free. If you buy 200 windows, you get 100 free. They do not have a limit on that. It is a great deal that they offer, and again, no limit. They want to make sure that in your home, you have the most high-quality, most energy-efficient windows. Do the entire home, and ask Justin and the guys about this when you give them a call. If you do the entire home, they are so confident that your heating and cooling bill, your energy bill, will decrease by at least 34% with their windows, as opposed to the windows you have right now. If it doesn't drop by that much, they cover the difference. Because what happens with some of these windows that you may have, and they may be as old as the house, but the air that you're trying to keep in the house or pump in the house, cold air, warm air, it escapes through some of these older windows. They're just not as high quality, not as durable, not as energy efficient. Also, you get this set up with the windows, the siding, the doors, and you don't have to make a single payment for a full year. So get these windows in, experience the savings, and then no payments for a full year. Located in Menominee Falls, 262-703-3500, 262-703-3500, windowselect.com. Again, windowselect.com. We'll give you the Packers schedule as we have it. It's trickling in throughout the day. Everybody needs to know now instead of 6 p.m. tonight, so we'll keep trying to do that for you. Also, the Brewers, they've got to figure out this offense. And I'm not just talking about this season. This is like a decade and a half long problem for the Brewers. We'll have the latest on that as well. Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz on the Fan.
I mean, he's been that since day one of the season. You know, I think we knew that in spring training. He was going to have a real good season, and he started it off that way. So he's a good pitcher. He's got more weapons now. And it's tough to get hits against him. And he came out today and he was kind of locked in from right away. It was a really dominant outing from him.
It was a great outing by Freddy Peralta, and the Brewers right now have at least two up to four guys who can give you this outing. Two out of every three times. I mean, the pitching is great. Brandon Woodruff is a great pitcher. Corbin Burns on the injured list, should be back Thursday. He is a great pitcher. Adrian Hauser has shown you he can have these kind of outings. Freddy Peralta as well. Last night, seven innings, one hit, eight strikeouts. They couldn't do anything off of him.
So as I mentioned, I'm at the Bucks game, so clearly I'm watching that, but I'm following the score with the Brewers throughout, and I every time I check, it's 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, and you think to yourself, well, they're going to lose. I mean, at some point, they are going to lose this baseball game. The Brewers give up the run in the eighth, and then in the 11th, they take it to extras, the Brewers and Cardinals do, and in the 11th, the Cardinals tack on 5. Brewers then load the bases at the bottom frame and then do nothing with it. So this offense, absolutely dreadful. Craig Counsell on the lack of success with runners in scoring position.
We just didn't get the next hit. And sometimes, you know, we hit a couple balls to the wall. You know, Jackie lines out in a you know, we couldn't find a hole. And so ultimately it's, you know, there was one hit with the man in scoring position ultimately. And so, you know, that's going to be tough to score then. So, you know, that ninth inning against Gallegos, we hit 3 balls on the screws and got nothing to show for that one. So there was some good innings. There was pressure, but we just kept coming up empty.
And when Counsell's asked about that question, lack of scoring with runners in scoring position, it's not just about last night. It's about the season up to this point. And really it's about his entire tenure as manager. And it's about the Brewers the last 15 years. This is not a new problem for the Milwaukee Brewers. There have been a lot of times just this season where they've had runners in scoring position or the bases loaded and they do nothing with it. Now, you could say, all right, it's just the bats, it's not working, it's a problem. Don August, former Brewers pitcher, was tweeting this last night. He said, I know the Brewers don't bunt, but God, I would love to see him do it one time late in a close game. Over the past couple of weeks, we've had multiple runners in scoring position stranded by a multitude of unproductive at-bats. The game's just changed. Maybe a team will revert back one day. I understand people's frustration watching a struggling offense not do everything in their power to manufacture runs. And I think what this goes back to is the productive outs and the dreaded A-word analytics, where a bunt is, you're giving up an out if you bunt. If you sack bunt, you're giving up an out. But especially in the case of extra innings. You know, if you got a guy on second base, you can easily get that guy home without getting a hit. And if you're the team at the bottom, if you're the home team, and you know you only need one run to win, like last night it was 1-1, Cardinals don't score in the 10th, Brewers just need one run instead. What was it, Jackie Bradley Jr. trying to hit a bomb? Get the ball in play. Move the runner over. There was a game last week or 2 weeks ago where it looked like there was going to be a hit and run. And B.A. and Rock were getting all giddy about it. It wasn't meant to be. Bunting just doesn't happen. And we totally understand like what the analytics say. But situational baseball, especially in these extra innings where it's designed to encourage that. If you have a guy on second with no outs and you just go hack it up there with like trying to get the home run, how is that any more productive than, hey, let's do everything we can to get this guy to third and then I'll, you know, try to send a pop fly and then the guy will come home. Is it this simple? Are they making it harder than it has to be? Or are people like me still wistful for an era when teams manufactured runs, Sam? I don't know what it is.
No, you're not alone because, man, one of my favorite teams other than the Brewers the past couple of years has been that Kansas City Royals team that made it to the World Series with Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer, and Mike Moustakas. I mean, they played in Kauffman Stadium, which is arguably one of the deepest ballparks in all of baseball, and they were able to muster up runs every game. And, I mean, there's something to be said. I get just as excited about an RBI double in the gaps or, like, you know, triple and all that. Or even just an RBI single. I get just as excited for that as a home run. And it's just frustrating because, you know, I get the whole we're never going to bunt and all that. We just don't like giving up an out. But when your offense is struggling the way it is, I mean, try to help these guys just get a little bit of confidence or just muster up anything. I mean, man, if you were able to get game one of this series against the Cardinals, it would have been huge. But instead, I'm stuck looking at all these batting averages on the Brewers team right now, which is just atrocious. Now, yes, I still do look at batting averages.
Yeah, we're a batting average show. We're an on-base percentage show, but we're a batting average show as well. But I mean, I do think that both are important, and it does tell a big part of the story. And if I tell you batting averages, who's the best Brewer batting average right now that, like, consistently plays? Who's got the best? Colton Wong?
Yep, 273 is the highest batting average other than Narvaez and Yelich.
Okay, still, we don't have an update on him. So, I mean, that's a problem. You're missing Yelich. But the rest of these guys, Kane, .188, Pena, .156, McKinney down to .207 after his hot start. Bradley Jr. is a killer at .175. This has not gone the way that they wanted it to go. And earlier this week, I said he's the guy that I still have hope for to turn it around. And yes, when you think of Jackie Bradley Jr., if you think offense or defense, you're going to think defense. But 175 is not the kind of numbers that you're expecting. You don't pay $10 million to a Gold Glover if you think he's only going to give you a 175 average at the plate. And you want to talk about on-base percentage? I don't think it was until a game last week when he finally got a walk. So his on-base percentage isn't much better. Brewer's just struggling all the way around here.
I'm going to keep hammering on this just because it's frustrating to me, because you could have gotten Carlos Santana for the same price as Jackie Bradley Jr. Carlos Santana would have had the highest on-base percentage on this team right now at .383, other than Yelich and Narvaez.
Yeah, it's Yeah. Keep hammering.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's frustrating. I mean, you're going to have to look at probably bringing in somebody, I would think, before the trade deadline, or even maybe in a couple weeks and all that, if this keeps on going, because you finally have like enough prospects or guys that have young experience and all that you could use to make a trade, and even multiple ones. I mean, I don't know, maybe you get another bullpen arm too, but you got to do something to address this offense, because, man, if you're banking on Keston Hira coming back up and saving the offense, you're in trouble.
BJ says, I've been waiting my whole life for the Brewers to have pitching like this. And the games are almost unwatchable. Way too many strikeouts. You have to put the ball in play and put pressure on their defense. 10 minutes between balls in play. Gross. Yeah, this pitching staff, it's being wasted. You have an outing like that from Freddie Peralta and you don't win the game? That's a wasted outing. And the Brewers have been, what's the opposite of few and far between? Often between. This is happening a lot for the Brewers. Mark says, Aaron Rodgers complains he has not been getting the support he needs. Brewers pitchers say, hold my beer. The comedy ripe this morning. Jeff says, Kane's last at-bat in that game was easily the worst of his career as a Brewer. Taylor's at-bat was equally as bad, but he's not really someone who we expect to produce in these moments yet. The team-wide inability to put the ball in play is maddening. There's a new baseball this year, which was supposed to put the ball in play more, less home runs, more action. It's not working. The pitchers, I mean, there's 5, 6, if you count mad bums, no hitters this year. This is a common trend throughout baseball where the ball's not being put in play, but the Brewers seem to go to an extreme in terms of, and I'm, you know, there was this never bunt movement, and I get it. But also, you still, baseball more than maybe any other sport, you got to go by gut. Oh, the pitcher's laboring out there. I want to take him out, but my gut tells me he's gonna pull back and get this hitter. Or my gut tells me, yeah, he's doing well, but it's his third time through the order. My gut is telling me I got to take him out. My gut tells me this is when I need it to bunt. My gut tells me a hit and run might work here. It can't be all analytics. You shouldn't be all anything at anything ever, I think. That made sense when I was trying to say it. You can't go never bunt, especially with this extra innings format, especially with this format. Matt says the Brewers have created a conflict in what they built and what they believe. They built a team on pitching and defense. Those teams win by small ball. However,
They have openly stated their dislike of that play style, even if they don't have the lineup for it. That's a really good tweet, Matt. That's another tweet. Spark Guy says, Brewers fans, don't worry. Be around 500 around July 15th, and you'll be fine. Trust me. Stearns will help that pitching once things matter. So he feels like at the trade deadline or near it, there will be some help, and they're going to need help if they're going to win this division. Cardinals, I don't know how much better the Cardinals are than the Brewers. They went a long time without a hit last night. Record-wise, they're 22-14, Brewers 19-17. And again, with everything that's happened with the Brewers, you would say 19-17, we will take that. 19-17, yes, we will take that with everything that's gone on. But when you still give away games like this, like they did last night, that is a problem. Steve says, there are three things that I've got that are more likely than Council bunting a runner over. One, the Brewers keeping the roof open when a rain shower is within 100 miles of the stadium. Thank you. Way too quick to keep this roof closed.
Yeah, I don't really get the logic of it.
Weren't they like, hey, we can have fans because of we're going to keep the roof open. And it'll be baseball outside. I think, how many times has the roof been open this year?
They don't even open it. Like, I feel like they never open it, even like during the game, too.
Yeah, once it's closed, it's closed.
Right.
And I thought we were going to get like 50-degree games where they'd close the roof or open the roof. I thought that was part of the protocols, but I guess not. I just want to see the roof open more. Yadier or Molina going an entire game without complaining about something, Steve says, is more likely than Council bunting a runner over. The heat death of the universe, he says, is number three. Nick says this team just won't bunt, sacrificing out for a run. Council just won't do it. Offense, again, is brutal. It's bad. And so I don't know at what point it changes, because Council's very dug in with this, and so are the Brewers, that they're just not going to manufacture runs is what I'll say. And we'll talk to Tim about this at 9 o'clock. I'm excited to pick his brain here. At what point does Council say, oh, okay, I'll do it now? Cause he hasn't done it for so long. At what point does he say, yeah, you know what? Everyone's right. Everybody's right. I'm wrong. I don't see him doing that. You guys are all right. I'm wrong. Let's bunt. Let's bunt more. Then there's games where guys do bunt and we're like, oh my God. And Council gets asked about it. He goes, I didn't tell him about it. He just bunted.
It's just sad, though, because nobody this year in baseball is playing small ball. There's not a single team that is thriving off of not really slugging and all that. I mean, I'm looking right now. The best batting average in all the league right now is the Boston Red Sox, but their combined team average is 250 or 261. So it's just, I mean, it's a league-wide issue, but it just doesn't make sense, because you'd think with all these teams trying to do launch angle and slugging and all that, you think the counter would be small ball, but I guess not.
Well, one team's going to do it, and they're going to start winning games.
Yeah.
If 30 teams are doing one thing, and it's not really working for any of them, one team's going to start doing the other way, and they're going to start winning games. What a good tweet, though, from Matt. They have built a team pitching and defense. Those teams win by small ball, and yet the Brewers still ignoring that fact. The Horvat Happy Hour coming up next. We'll talk to Nick Kostos, You Better You Bet. We'll talk to Tim Allen today. Lots to get to. And at 9:30, Patrick Baldwin Jr. You think he's coming to Milwaukee?
God, I hope so.
It wouldn't still be on his list if he's not coming, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have some more thoughts about it later on.
All right. Sam Schmitz, Bart Winkler on The Fan.